This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We are 3 hours to the weekend. I hope you are not far behind. Looking forward to this weekend. Someone asked me today, how are you? And my answer was, I'm tired. It's October. But I have big plans for the weekend. Maybe if I'm feeling chatty later, I'll tell you what they are. I'm pretty excited about them. This is a unique thing for me. I'm not sure I've ever done this. Definitely haven't done this since I joined CBS Sports Radio. So I'm excited about my plans for the weekend. Of course, they will include baseball. We've got at least one more game in the ALCS that comes up on Friday evening in the Bronx, 7 o'clock first pitch Eastern time. That's 4 o'clock. That's early. 4 o'clock on the West Coast, but 6 o'clock for those of you who are listening in Houston. And that's important because if the Astros can pull off 3 straight wins at Yankee Stadium, they will move back to the World Series for the second time in 3 years. Now, consider the Nationals closed out their NLCS a couple days ago. And the World Series will not start before Tuesday. Baseball does it on purpose, trying to avoid the conflicts with football. So the World Series won't start until Tuesday in either Houston or New York City. This layoff generally... In theory, in concept, would be a positive thing for the arms, specifically for the bullpen, but being able to line up your rotation exactly the way that you want it, that should be an advantage for the Nationals. But the studies show, and by studies, I mean statistics, the statistics show that teams who have a long layoff before a World Series actually... the majority of the time don't end up winning. Whether it's a psychological thing because you're not facing live at bats, you're not facing live pitching, you kind of get out of that mode where you're used to the pressure and the tension. Whatever the reason is, it's hard to pinpoint how it happens, why it happens. But generally, when a team has had a long layoff, from the championship series to the World Series, it's ended up losing in the Fall Classic. We talked about that with Casey Stern from MLB on TBS when he joined us earlier this week. However, just because every other team, or most every other team, has gone through that letdown doesn't mean the Nationals will. Certainly have a lot of time to scout and get ready and prepare. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. We're inside the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. They understand it's not just a mortgage, it's your mortgage, and that's the difference. Rocket Mortgage, push button, get mortgage. We will hear more from the Astros and the Yankees as we head through this edition of the show. You can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio, also on our Facebook page. So I didn't put the question up on Facebook, but I did tweet it. Which team was more thoroughly embarrassed on Thursday evening? Was it the Yankees or was it the Broncos? And certainly while the Broncos had higher expectations, you have to imagine that for the Chiefs, while losing Patrick Mahomes for any length of time is worst case scenario, losing him for the rest of the season would be devastating. But to lose him is going to cast a bitter pall over any victory. But they very well could have folded up and lost that game. And yet, that's not at all what happened. And I was really impressed with the way other guys stepped up. I was impressed with the fact that the Kansas City defense immediately came through with a massive play. Okay, so here's the sequence. right after the Broncos go with a weird and disastrous fake punt that hands the Chiefs sweet field position. They have a 4th and 1 at the 5-yard line, and there's the Mahomes rushing attempt. This is exactly 10 minutes to go. I don't think I'll ever forget it. 10 minutes to go in the second quarter. And he injures his knee. We now know it was a dislocated kneecap. They popped it back into place right there on the field, but he was able to walk to the locker room on his own power after that. I did hear, actually, he was in the locker room and was the one that led the breakdown. You know, when everybody comes together in the middle, puts their hands in. Team on three. 1, 2, 3, team. Something like that. And so he was there and he was the one who led it, which is good news. But immediately after, the entire stadium in Denver, not to mention every football fan and other football player who's watching Thursday Night Football, is processing this and stunned at what we've seen at Pat Mahomes getting hurt, the Kansas City defense steps up. Now, Matt Moore comes in. They have to settle for a field goal. So the game is still 13-6. At this point, until they tack on another field goal. So it's a manageable game. It's a one-possession game. But immediately after that, when the Broncos are thinking, oh, Mahomes is out. Now we really have to take advantage. And they had scored on the opening drive. It went from bad to worse for Denver.
Three receivers flood the right side. Flacco looks that way, flushed out of the pocket, loses the ball. It's rolling inside the 5, scooped up, Reggie Ragland, touchdown, Kansas City. The Chiefs defense knocks it away from Flacco and then takes it in for the score.
On Westwood 1, Ian Eagle with the call. Literally moments later. After they lose Mahomes, settle for a field goal from the 5-yard line, the Kansas City defense steps up with one of its huge plays. A sack and a fumble of Flacco by Anthony Hitchens, which pushes them all the way back, almost to the goal line, and the ball scooped up by Reggie Ragland for a 5-yard TD. Really impressive the way that the defense decided, you know what? We just lost our MVP. The offense is going to need us. Let's go to work. And did exactly that. The Chiefs allow a season low 71 yards rushing. And they rack up 9 sacks, including a career high 8 sacks of Joe Flacco. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4227. Of course, everyone wanted to hear from Andy Reid following the game. Why have Pat Mahomes, who's already got a gimpy ankle, go for it himself? Why have him take the plunge on 4th and 1?
Not too many people get hurt on a sneak, and so it's a freak thing. And, you know, it happens. So you know, I was proud of our guys stepping up.
No doubt. In addition to stuffing the run, all of those sacks, the Broncos are just 1 of 13 on third down and only come up with 205 total yards. But the question, of course, will be moving forward, what does the MRI say about Pat Mahomes and his kneecap? How much damage is there around the kneecap? How long will he be out? I did see that Pat tweeted not that long after the game, and it's good to know that he was optimistic.
He's in a good place. I mean, he was in a good place on the field when it happened. Grimace, our doc, was phenomenal and just calming everything down. Dr. Schreppel, he just kind of calmed the storm right there. And Pat was good, felt very comfortable with him.
And so Patrick Mahomes is, I mean, he's a world-class athlete. They're obviously getting good medical attention, and they relieve some of that pain immediately by popping that kneecap back in place. I've seen it with shoulders before. That was the first time I'd ever seen it with a kneecap. And afterwards, right after the game, he tweets, awesome team win. Love my brothers. Thank you for all the prayers. Everything looking good so far. Hashtag God is good. Hashtag Chiefs kingdom. And so Mahomes, as Andy Reid points out, was in good spirits. Not so much for Joe Flacco and Vic Fangio and the Broncos locker room. Again, this is a game that they felt really good about because they just won back-to-back. Their defense had pitched a shutout against the Tennessee Titans, and they thought they'd be able to run the ball because the Chiefs had really been porous at stopping the run.
It's disappointing, you know, to not be ultimately competitive out there. We were competitive for a while. I mean, that it was 13-6 there for a while in lieu of the field position they had, you know, was good.
The last 3 weeks, man, we've shown so much improvement in so many ways in terms of us as a team and coming together and playing that kind of ball. So you can't, you know, it wouldn't say much about us if all of a sudden one game is going to derail all that progress that we've made.
They had a couple of last second losses in Denver. So the game against the Chicago Bears, the game against the Jacksonville Jaguars, they score in the final minute, the Broncos do, and the other team goes the opposite direction, gets a field goal. And so they've had really close calls at home, leading them to be optimistic. But this one, 9 sacks, couple of fumbles by Flacco, one that was scooped up for a defensive touchdown, and Matt Moore throws a 57-yard, well, he lofts a pass over the top of the defense to Tyreek Hill, who had come across the field and took this wicked angle with Chris Harris, and then, boom, is gone with that Tyreek Hill speed. So good for the Chiefs. This is exactly what they needed, minus the loss of Pat Mahomes. I'm hoping and praying, as I'm sure many people are. I saw Deshaun Watson, Carson Wentz, among other quarterbacks and NFL players tweeting at him, hoping it's not serious and we'll be back in a few weeks. But for the Chiefs, this is exactly what they needed. They're now 4-0, actually, away from home, which is intriguing considering the atmosphere at Arrowhead Stadium. But the Chiefs are 4-0 on the road, now 5-2 overall. And they've got 2 more wins than the Raiders. Of course, have had their bye, but are also above 500. The Broncos fall to 2-5. And this is the one that stings the most. I mean, the losses hurt for sure. But when you hold up the 2 home teams on Thursday, the national platform, can imagine the Yankees feel just as embarrassed, but also feel that sting just as much. And they're staring at potentially just one more game in their season. So you can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio, but I'd love to talk football with you. As we head into week 7, we're going to pick 4 games, of course, that we'll put into our Twitter/Facebook poll. The game that you're most looking forward to, but there are some doozies. Oakland at Green Bay. And again, we just talked about the Raiders being above 500. The Packers, of course, coming off Monday Night Football, so a short work week for them. In the NFC North, Vikings and Lions. So the Lions can maybe erase some of that bad taste if they can come away with a victory at home. Here's one that I don't think is going to go in our poll. The Niners at the Redskins. Oy vey. But how about the Saints in Chicago at Soldier Field against the Bears? The Ravens and the Seahawks. 2 teams with a combined 3 losses between them. Sunday Night Football, the Eagles and the Cowboys. Really good matchups on tap for week 7. So which one are you most looking forward to? And for sure, let's talk some football Americano. 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4 CBS. Whenever I'm in Cuba, I have to clarify football and football Americano. Also on our Facebook page and Twitter, it's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
receivers right, one left, tight end tight to the line left side. That's Hockenson. Single back carry on Johnson. Stafford wants to throw it with protection. Steps into a deep throw. He wants Hall out there. He's got him at the 30. Hall 25. Hall shoved out of bounds at the 16-yard line by Shandon Sullivan. The Lions are coming out firing tonight.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
On the Lions Radio Network, Dan Miller. And the Lions, of course, have to turn around and pick themselves up. Now face another divisional opponent in the NFC North. And I love that division. I really do. It's one that has a lot of good rivalries, but a lot of history to it. And I'm such a history nut. And it seems like every time these teams step on the field, we get some kind of intriguing storyline. And also, they beat the crap out of each other. It's physical and it's tough and it's hard-nosed. Part of it is the cities in which they play, the weather in which they play a lot of time. Though, of course, Minnesota is indoors, so is Detroit. But they have to go to Green Bay, to Lambeau. They have to go to Soldier Field. I love the atmospheres there as well. And so now we get Detroit against Minnesota coming off of that Monday night loss to the Green Bay Packers. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. I look forward to talking football with you as this is our football Friday morning show. For most of you, it's a Friday morning. It's certainly not Friday morning in every corner of the United States. However, we like to jump on the Friday because we want it to be Friday. So even when it's not, it still feels like my Thursday night because I stay on West Coast time if I can. But we want it to be Friday. And so sometimes I will send texts to my friends on Thursday night that say happy Friday or happy almost Friday. 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4CBS. It's our toll-free line brought to you by Geico with a quick way you can save money. Switch to Geico. Go to geico.com and in 15 minutes you could save 15% or more on your car insurance. My Friday, I think, officially started. Okay, unofficially. My Friday unofficially started when I was driving home from an errand on Thursday afternoon and I had to dodge a pumpkin rolling down the street. Oh my gosh, the win was a pregame storyline for the Yankees and Astros, though it didn't end up really affecting the game that much. But that same wind, because I live in the New York City area, was rolling pumpkins and down the middle of streets. Gosh, it was one of those days, and I know there are a lot of other people affected by the wind, power outages, lines down, trees down. It was definitely one of those days where when I was walking the dog or when I was driving, there's debris flying all over the place, and you also have to either drive or walk around the branches and the big, huge limbs that have fallen onto the ground. So I just decided that was it. I wasn't going to deal with Thursday anymore. When I have to dodge a pumpkin in my car, Princess Leia did well, though. When we have to dodge a pumpkin, it's time to just go ahead and move on to Friday. What's the game you're most looking forward to as we dive into a football Friday? Anthony says, I'm looking forward to the Cowboys-Eagles game. The winner will probably win the NFC East. I mean, it's week 7, dude. I feel like people probably thought the Pittsburgh Steelers were probably going to win the AFC North midway through last season, and that didn't happen. However, that is a game that I'm definitely looking forward to. I mentioned the Seahawks and the Ravens, and not only do we get Russell Wilson, who was an early MVP candidate this season, we get him on the same field as Lamar Jackson, though not at the same time because that would be odd. But we get Earl Thomas, who's not part of the Legion of Boom anymore. In fact, there's just a handful of guys left in Seattle or with the Seahawks who were part of their Super Bowl runs a few years ago now. The years all blend together. I mean, most of that roster has turned over. Not all of it, but most of the coaching staff's turned over too. Pete Carroll's still there, of course, but they've changed coordinators. And yet, last season I felt like was probably Pete Carroll's best coaching job because of all the turnover, all the transition, new coordinators on both sides of the ball. They would win two and lose two. It felt like they were never consistent, not until maybe November. And yet they won double-figure games, and I felt like they grew. What doesn't kill you make you stronger. I know that's a bit cliche, but it certainly did work for the Seahawks, for their leadership, for the guys that were able to pass down culture. Hey, this is how we do things. And it's really impressive to see them now. There were a lot of questions about the offensive line starting the season. There were questions about who would Russell Wilson throw to. And, of course, questions about the defense. Losing guys like Frank Clark. Losing guys like Earl Thomas. And yet, on that side of the football, you can see the Seahawks really coming together.
Well, I think the leadership just has been amazing, just the growth of guys. And obviously, Bobby has been tremendous for us for years. KJ Wright, you know, his leadership. But I think guys like Dwayne has been, ever since he stepped into our building, has made a huge difference for us. I think Britt's been a great leader for us. I think that there's just so many different players and so many different people that have really stepped up. And I think that we're, as a collective group, we're really, really close.
So Bobby Wagner, of course, being one of the holdouts, one of the staples. But he also refers to Dwayne Brown in the offensive line. This is a team that, whether or not it gets the same attention, I think Russell Wilson a lot of times grabs that spotlight because of how good he is, how flashy he can be. But they've won a handful of games by 4 points or fewer. So the game against the Bengals in their season opener, whoo, that was a close call. They win by a point. Then they go on the road to Pittsburgh, where they only win by 2 points. Against the Rams in week 5, we saw that back and forth affair. Great game on Thursday Night Football. That was a 1 point win. And then against the Browns, a 4 point win this past weekend in Cleveland. And so that also makes you stronger, better, more tenacious, a little more focus, a little more discipline when you're playing in these pressure-packed situations. As for Earl Thomas, his beef is not with his former teammates. See, I kind of hope that Bryce Harper feels the same way. Earl has nothing against his former teammates. His beef was always with management, feeling like they didn't treat him the way that he deserved. And so should be interesting to see these two teams on the field together because of the ties between the Seahawks and the Ravens.
Guys been checking on me throughout the season, especially guys on defense, some of my old coaches, some of my old strength and conditioning staff, they've checked on me. But I'm sure, like, during pregame, once I go do my warm-ups, if I see some guys and we start a conversation, I'm not going to go out there and not talk to anybody.
Earl Thomas definitely familiar with Russell Wilson and what he can do, but this has been an incredible start to the season, even for Russ. 1,700 yards passing, 14 touchdowns, not one interception. And the way that Tyler Lockett has stepped into that spot as the top receiver, the way that the rookie DK Metcalf has been a find. Now, I know they've lost Will Disley, likely for the season, which is a huge blow to them because of the way that he had turned not just into this reliable blocking tight end, but also one who could catch passes. But right now, the Seahawks are among those winning teams who want to establish the run. And going back to probably 6 to 8 weeks left in the season last year, they decided they were going to be a run-first team. Chris Carson being the spearhead to that. And it has changed the look of their offense, but also changed what Russell Wilson can do. Because now it's not just about Russ. They are a lethal running team as well. I wrote about that in my column this week. I know I'm a delinquent, but I finally posted it on Facebook. What is the one thing that most of the NFL's top teams have in common? Help me to writing this helped me to channel my inner Woody Hayes. I didn't know I had an inner Woody Hayes. Anyway, it's pinned to the top of our Facebook page. I'd love to get your reaction. AfterHoursAmyLawrence.com. It's also on my Twitter, A-Law Radio. If you want to talk football, lots of you are sending me football tweets. I'd be happy to take your phone calls as well. Otherwise, I'll just keep talking. And I appreciate your tweets, though, and your Facebook posts. We're going to put our poll up, the game that you're most looking forward to. Lots of good choices, some good matchups like Houston, Indiana, AFC South in the spotlight. And we'll get to that, plus Jalen Ramsey. Oh, he was a full participant in practice. Amazing how that back injury is just... It's not a problem anymore. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Second and goal at the one. Deshaun calls for the ball. Here's the snap. Watson fakes the give. Steps out to his left. Watson wants to run, and he dives for the goal line. He's in! Deshaun Watson twisting his way into the end zone to grab the lead for Houston.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
That was your choice for TD of the week, I think. Yeah. Deshaun Watson. Late touchdown. Overcoming what were multiple miscues and mistakes, three turnovers by the Texans, and yet they won in Kansas City in large part because they were able to control the ball and keep it away from Pat Mahomes. I actually wrote about that a little bit in my column this week. Certainly what the Broncos wanted to do to start out week seven, and yet they were unable to run the ball. The Chiefs giving up a season low 71 yards rushing. They're going to play defense like that every week. Pat Mahomes may not need to run around and be a magician whenever he returns. I'm believing he's going to return. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Mark Vandermeer on the Texans Radio Network. We've got the poll up. This is our show poll for week seven. Which matchup are you most looking forward to? And we've got three divisional matchups who are part of the poll. As always, you can send us your write-in votes. We're cool with that. We recognize there are other games, and all of them have intrigue. I could sell you on every single one of them, even Niners-Redskins. Definitely Dolphins-Bills. So check that out on Twitter, After Hours CBS, also on our Facebook page. Huge matchup taking place in the AFC South. It's not just the fact that it's a divisional battle, though that's certainly important. But if you think about what the Texans have accomplished, and again, the adversity is making them stronger and better as well. Because they offensively don't always play a complete game, because they've got penalties here, turnovers there, they've had to fight and scratch and claw, including this victory against the Kansas City Chiefs in Arrowhead. But the Colts lost their starting quarterback days before the season kicked off. And yet, here they are at 3-2. They've already had their bye, so they're a half game behind the Texans. Remember when Adam Vinatieri had a really rocky start to the season? Man, that feels like a long time ago.
Divisional games are always important and fun, and obviously we know the Texans pretty well. They're a great team. They're playing really, really well now, and it being a divisional game, it's one game, but it holds a little more importance, I think.
So the Texans go into Lucas Oil Stadium after that game in Arrowhead. They also beat the Falcons, but that was a 53-32 win. The one that's crazy that also knocked me out of the survivor pool was only scoring 10 points in Houston against that Panthers defense. Now, the Panthers defense has been phenomenal the last few weeks. But certainly, a lot of what ails the Texans' offense are their own mistakes.
I think the biggest thing has been able to, you know, lock in and focus once we're down there and being able to execute at a high level. Everyone been on the same page, and then the self-inflicted penalties, you know, false starts and, you know, illegal formations, holdings, things like that. You know, we've been very, very sharp down there.
Deshaun Watson with 12 touchdowns so far on the season, just shy of 1,700 yards. Does have a few interceptions, but generally has played well. But as he points out, they've had their own issues holding on to the football. The offensive line took a few weeks to come together, though it has played a lot better. I remember he was getting sacked mercilessly to start the season. But it's not been that way the last couple of weeks, which is better. So you remember that game against Carolina? He was sacked 6 times. In the 2 games since they played the Panthers, 0 sacks of Deshaun Watson. That includes Kansas City, who just recorded 9 sacks against the Broncos. Oh my gosh. 1 week you're up, the next week you're down, the next week you're back up, the next week you suck. I mean, it's just, it's a roller coaster ride in the NFL. 855-212-4227. Let's talk to Alvin, who's in Florida. Welcome to After Hours.
Hey, good morning. How you doing?
I'm good.
I got a question for you, and I got another question. One is, would Jerry Jones ever put Jimmy Johnson on the wall? And second, I'm a Dallas Cowboy fan.
Wait, the wall. Realist. I'm sorry, I don't know what that means.
On the Ring of Honor.
Oh, wow.
But I'm a Dallas Cowboy fan. But after we lose to the Eagles this week, you're the head coach, you're the owner. Who are you going to replace Jason Garrett with, if you did?
I would go 99% confident he's not making a change in season. So I don't think he does make a change in season. And I mean, in terms of after the fact, I mean, that's a really great question, but who knows who's going to be available? I mean, it seems like right now, even on their own coaching staff, what they've gone with is fresh voices, younger guys, maybe a little innovative, a little more creative, at least on the offensive side of the ball. But Jerry Jones also likes someone that he feels, you know, speaks the same language and shares the philosophy and doesn't really want an alpha male who's going to push back. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I know that they've got a lot of weapons on offense, and this has been the major source of consternation. So you would think it would be someone who would come from the offensive side of the ball if they make a change.
Because when Al Davis was alive, he's the only coach that never voted against Al Davis. And that was his hero. And Jason Garrett has turned out to be his arch shell. You know, he always wanted to make his own prodigy. But this Jason Garrett, I would call him the junior arch shell. You try, but you can't. So move on. Well, a couple of years ago, they said he wanted Tony Dungy or Bill Cowher. We'll never get those kind of coaches. They're not that kind of person.
But who's not that kind of person?
Bill Cowher and Tony Dungy would never come to Dallas. That's what he wanted.
Well, I don't think that either one of them is ever going to coach again, but I could be wrong.
I'm talking about that caliber of a coach who just run their team. You know, the style he's doing right now is not – I'm not against Jason Garrett, but the style he's doing now would just do like I tell you. It just doesn't work. Because they've got an awesome team. They've got talent.
Do they? So you're saying that when they step on the field, it's only Jason Garrett that's holding them back?
I think it's just discipline how you run a team. I honestly do. I'm not saying he's a bad person, but I'm old school. I believe in strict discipline, you know, by the book, do as I say. That might be my falling, but I'm old school.
No, I mean, it's to each his own. I mean, Jason Garrett's definitely not a disciplinarian. That's not who he is. But I resist the notion that it all stops at his feet. I mean, yes, he's the head coach, but come on, the players have got to bear some responsibility too for the ways that they don't do what they're supposed to do when they're out there on the field. So yeah, I mean, I get it. The coach is the part that you can change, unless they decide to go a different direction at QB. But Jerry Jones has been really consistent in saying that that's not going to happen. So we'll see. I think it's interesting that you led with when they lose to the Eagles. the Eagles themselves are coming off a couple of games that they'd like to have back. All right, Alvin, thanks so much for your phone call from Florida. Let's talk to Jared, who's in Ventura, California. Jared, welcome to After Hours.
Hey, Amy, how you doing?
I'm great.
Love the show as always. I want to talk about my favorite game and most interesting game. I think it's the Ravens versus Seattle. Like, I don't know what my Ravens are going to do. Like, I just don't know this year. Like, they're so unpredictable. It's like riding a wave. It's fun, don't get me wrong, but
Now, which part of it gives you pause? So I feel like when their defense has had a couple of bad games, but
I love Lamar. It's not the bad games. Like, it's just it's a non-stereotypical offense and a non-stereotypical team for the Ravens. So, like, it's taking some time for us Ravens fans to adjust from this defensive culture into this, I don't know, explosive, I don't know what's going to happen every play game. Like, I don't know what's going to happen every week. It's fun, but it's nerve-wracking.
I mean, I think that's generally every fan base in the NFL. I mean, there's still not a ton of consistency. I was just talking about the Texans, who are 4-2, and yet they got, you know, they got completely stymied by the Panthers defense at home a couple of weeks ago, and then they go to Kansas City and win. So, yeah, I think it's a roller coaster for most teams, even the Patriots and the Niners, actually, who are both undefeated. The Niners had a game in which they turned the ball over 5 times recently and still won. The Patriots' offense at times has really not looked prolific at all. It's been the defense that's been really good. I think there's still some inconsistency. We're only in the second month of the season.
But isn't it fun? It's fun.
Yes.
It's great. Like, the whole NFL this season, last week I got within a game within winning the week of my pick pulls from Detroit, and I picked Detroit over Green Bay, and, I mean, you saw what happened there. But you never know what's going to happen this year, and it's a blast.
I think that's the case every year in the NFL. That's one of the reasons why I love it so much, is that you really can have a team start out crappy and win a division. You can have a team go from worst to first or the other way around. So, yeah, it's one of the reasons that I love it so much. Jared, thanks so much for your phone call. I'm glad you're excited. You sound giddy about week 7. If you're giddy about week 7, or even if you're grumpy about week 7, we have our poll up, which is the game that you're most looking forward to this weekend. So you can find that on Twitter, A-Law Radio, or on our Facebook page. One other thing I'll say about the Dallas Cowboys, too, their receiving core right now is really banged up. So how is that Jason Garrett's fault? It's just popular to blame Jason Garrett. It's After Hours on CBS Sports Radio.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.